Chapter 9.
I don't want to hurt any of you puny humans.
Emma's voice floated over the walls of our house, and the blue glow of her lightning flashed against the dark gray of the pre-dawn sky.
But if even one of you makes a move to attack, I will fry all of you in a second. It's very painful to be struck by lightning, you know. Quite an unpleasant way to go.
I rushed toward the door to the outside as I yanked my holster belt closed around my waist with one hand, and I pulled my Glock out of the holster with the other. I wasn't at my most graceful, especially since I was still bleary-eyed and surprised from being woken up. But the important thing was that I got outside with my weapon in hand in time to protect my family and my home. I pushed the door open and quickly took in the scene before me. Emma's hair floated around her face. Her raised hands glowed blue, and sparks crackled along her fingertips. Fila crouched in front of Floppy with her trusty spear in one hand and her garden weasel in the other. Her tail lashed back and forth, and her mammoth snorted and tossed his head as he showed his tusks to the crowd. The eagle warriors who surrounded us wore the same armor and carried the same kinds of weapons as they had the day their comrades had attacked us, but none of them were on their war bison. They held their obsidian-bladed club knives in front of their mesh-covered faces in ready positions, but not one of them so much as seemed to twitch a muscle. Front and center stood Grandfather Day and Chief Red Squirrel, shoulder to shoulder. Grandfather Day gripped his walking stick and smirked at us, but Chief Red Squirrel's face was solemn and drawn. It wasn't hard to tell which one of them was pleased about the situation.
"Ah, the great warrior awakes," Grandfather Day crowed. "So powerful, and yet you leave your women to keep watch while you slumber in your home."
"Why are you here, old man?" I asked. I kept my Glock aimed at Grandfather Day's head. I knew there were more eagle warriors out there than I could reasonably shoot. But if I took Grandfather Day out with a weapon they didn't understand, maybe I could psych out the rest of the warriors enough to make them retreat. I really didn't want to be the one to make the first move, though. And since the warriors weren't attacking yet, I decided to hold my fire. "Is it about the speech? Did you come here to deliver a press release?"
"Yes, this is about the wisdom that you are to give to the people of the Three Fires,"
the chief said. She glanced around at the warriors.
"We thought it would be best to hear what you are going to say before you tell the tribe."
"It does not matter what they tell the tribe," Grandfather Day argued. "Already there is unrest. The women have been sharpening their hoes and rakes for weaponry. I even saw Weasel Teeth teaching the boys how to put on war paint."
"We are sharpening our tools to prune back plants and passing on our knowledge,"
the chief argued.
"And the people of the village will be here any minute to hear the spirits speak. Just having the warriors here to watch will be enough to make sure that nobody in the village starts any trouble."
"So you're not here to kill us before we talk to the villagers?" I said to Grandfather Day. "You're just here to threaten us into saying what you want us to say, right?"
"What kind of shaman would let the spirits die?"
Fila growled.
"If your people see their gods slaughtered in front of them, they will lose faith not just in the spirits, but in you."
"Yes, such awful bloodshed might inspire them to rise up and rebel anyway,"
Emma added. She raised her sparking hands.
"Now, shall I send a nice bolt of lightning up into the sky to let the people of the village know that we're ready for them? Or would you prefer to feel the fury of the Thunderbird yourself?"
"This is useless," Grandfather Day said to the chief. "We already know what must be done for the good of our people. If you will not give the order to attack, then I will."
"Grandfather, I will not order these warriors to attack when none of these spirits have harmed any of us."
Chief Red Squirrel crossed her arms over her chest.
"They have already killed a whole troop of warriors," Grandfather Day argued.
He shook his head, then he turned his head to the warriors behind him.
"Now is the chance for you to avenge your brothers. Go!"
Fila growled and raised her spear up into the air. Floppy lowered his head, and Emma's hands sparked with lightning bolts, and I rested my finger on the trigger of my Glock. The front line of warriors shifted on their feet, but they didn't move. They started to turn their heads and murmur to each other.
"You are wise to delay attacking,"
Acrasis called. She pointed at the pile of empty armor that we'd ended up shoving off to the side once we'd looted the weapons.
"We made your brothers disappear, And we will do the same thing to you.
More of the warriors started to murmur, and a little spark of hope started to rise inside my chest.
They attacked in the middle of the night when the Sun Eagle's eye was closed.
Grandfather Day stamped the bottom of his walking stick on the ground. Then he pointed up at the sky that was slowly getting lighter.
Now his eye opens, and he awakes from his slumber. With the help of the great Sun Eagle, you will be able to kill these weak local spirits easily.
How much are you willing to bet on that outcome, you mean old man?
Emma yelled. She raised her hands as glowing balls of blue lightning formed above her palms.
If a single one of you thinks they can take us.
Chief Red Squirrel raised her hands and her voice as she started to chant what sounded like rhythmic nonsense syllables to my ear. Her song didn't resolve into a story that made any sense to me despite my translator, but she clearly knew exactly what she was saying. So I figured that the syllables themselves had some kind of cultural meaning that I just didn't know. Her chant rose above the warriors, and after just two repetitions of the syllables, more voices started to join hers.
What?
Grandfather Day hissed at Chief Red Squirrel.
What are you doing, woman? That's not one of their chants.
A few of the warriors turned to each other, and a couple of them shook their heads in confusion as they looked at each other. More of them stood in a ready stance with their heads held high, and it seemed like they were the ones who were joining in the song with the chief. Some of them confused-looking warriors pulled out their obsidian shard-covered clubs, but the line of warriors in front locked their arms together as the others attempted to advance.
I think a lot of these guys might actually be on our side, I whispered to the ladies.
It seems like a definite possibility,
Emma agreed.
But it'll be hard to tell the ones who are on our side from the ones who aren't.
The warriors who are not on our side will be the ones attacking us,
Fila whispered back.
Be ready to fight and pay attention.
One warrior held up his obsidian blade, turned to the man on his right, and shoved his blade into the man's mesh protector. The other warrior jerked his head back, staggered backward into a group of his fellow warriors, and swung his own blade at the man who'd tried to slash his face mesh. A gleaming golden arm came from behind the defensive attacker, hooked around his sword arm, and yanked it back.
Warriors! Grandfather Day hissed. What are you doing? Don't break ranks now!
The chief's voice rose in a sudden ululation, and then all hell broke loose. The warriors on the front line stood shoulder to shoulder and held up their blades. More warriors from the back charged forward and battened themselves against the linked arms of their battle brothers. The frontline warriors twisted to defend themselves with their blades, but the charging men slashed back with their own weapons, and the melee quickly devolved into a sea of flashing blades and gleaming ripped armor.
I have no fucking idea who to shoot at, I whispered to Emma. I can barely see who's who, or which limbs belong to which fighter.
It's a cattywampus situation.
Emma's hair had started to pull away from her neat bun. Her eyes glowed like a sapphire, and rills of lightning traveled up and down her arms.
I don't want to Westinghouse any of our fellows, but I've got to discharge soon.
Just send up a bolt into the air, I suggested. Hopefully that'll get the people in the village to stay away anyway. We really don't need a bunch of grannies and kids getting involved with all of this right now.
I might as well.
Emma raised her hands above her head, stuck out her tongue as she concentrated, and then she released a single gigantic bolt of brilliant blue lightning up into the bright blue dawn sky. A thunderclap shook the earth so hard that even I winced. The warriors paused their fighting, Grandfather Day cringed, and even Chief Red Squirrel looked startled at the sound.
Yeah!
I raised my free fist up into the air.
See what a thunderbird can do? Better run away before you're fried like fish! Charge now!
Grandfather Day yelled. He glared at the frozen warriors behind him.
Now, while she's gathering more power, you can take her! She's just a woman!
Fila sprang forward silently with the spiky garden weasel slung back against her shoulder. She arced the wicked-looking gardening tool over her head as she leapt, then brought it down toward Grandfather Day. The shaman yelped, leapt back, and held up his knobbly walking stick as Fila's weapon came crashing down on it. His stick splintered like a toothpick under the spikes of her weapon and the force of her muscles, and the rotating spike slammed into his wrinkly old neck. His ashy brown skin tore apart under the bright, steely spikes and let out a spray of bright red arterial blood. A clump of warriors rushed toward the line of linked arms with their obsidian sword clubs raised high. The warriors in front of them raised their own weapons and sliced back at the charging force. But the obsidian clubs only clashed against each other. The warriors' weapons threw off shattered splinters of sharp obsidian shards as they broke on impact. A few of them managed to charge through the linked line of arms toward us. Clearly, these were the guys who were under the shaman's orders, and not the guys who'd been secretly against the shaman with the chief. Emma's hands glowed with bright sparks once again, and she crooked her fingers toward the gold-clad warriors who were charging at us. She thrust her hands forward, and a bright bolt of thick blue lightning shot toward the charging warriors. Her electricity zipped and zapped between their bodies as they twitched and spasmed, and curls of gray smoke began to rise from the mesh in their helmets. Emma stepped back and dropped the lightning as soon as the smell of burnt steak began to drift through the air.
"Hey!"
A man's cry sounded off to my left. Three warriors had broken through the wall of linked arms and were running right at us with their weapons raised. Two more warriors ran right after them, but it was hard to tell if they were with the three that were charging us or whether they were running after the warriors in order to try to stop them. I didn't want to kill anyone who was on our side, but I definitely needed to take care of those three attackers. I steadied myself, aimed my Glock at the middle warrior, and fired. My ears rang as the report echoed off the surrounding trees, and my bullet hit the warrior's chest with a spray of reddened white stuffing. The warrior crumpled to the ground. One of his friends flinched away from his comrade's toppling body. When he jerked to the side, his hand flew up with his blade club in it, as if to throw it at me. A strip of coppery skin showed between the end of his gauntlet and his golden arm. But in a flash, a black-colored blade swung through it. His hand and blade disappeared into the gray of the night, and a bright spray of red blood spurted from his wrist. He screamed a muffled scream, dropped to his knees, and clamped his free hand around his bleeding wrist. The third warrior didn't get much further than the other two before he screamed and stumbled forward. When he fell to the ground, another gleaming gold warrior rose up behind him with a blood-covered blade. The warrior who'd felled him nodded at me, turned around, and stabbed another warrior in the throat. He jabbed his elbow back into another warrior's mesh face, but a golden arm wrapped around his neck, and his head jerked backwards. I aimed the Glock at the man who'd started to choke my defender. Then I squeezed off a shot. My bullet hit the warrior's head just about where I figured his ear was, and his head slumped sideways. I kept my Glock ready as the warrior slumped to the ground, but my guy ducked back into the fray just as soon as I'd gotten the choker off his back. Now I could tell which warriors were trying to hold the others back again, but I couldn't get a clear enough shot at any of the warriors who were trying to break through to be confident that I wouldn't hit any of my own guys. A scream sounded off to my right, and I whirled around with my Glock up and ready. Several of the gold-clad warriors had made it onto the dirt circle, but their bottom halves were covered in what looked like a long, clingy skirt of Acrasis's gleaming, translucent slime. Their toes and knees bent out the material as though they were trying to walk, and they slashed at the gleaming stuff with their obsidian-covered clubs, but they couldn't seem to move or make any dent in Acrasis's slimy coat. Behind them, a foot-wide river of gleaming slime spread over the perimeter of the dirt circle. The warriors behind them raised their obsidian weapons, but they seemed understandably hesitant to attack. Fila wiggled her ass in her ready position over to my right, where Acrasis's moat of defensive goo was still just a thin, shining thread. Her yellow-green eyes were focused on a group of warriors who crouched just behind the dirt circle. She clearly wasn't sure if the warriors were still holding the line against our foes or whether they were trying to decide whether to attack, and I wasn't either, so I aimed my gun in their direction just in case. The warriors looked at each other for a moment, crouched, and then all leapt across the thin gleaming circle of slime with their obsidian blades out. Clearly, they were not on our side. I squeezed off a shot at one of the warriors, and his neck snapped backwards with a bright red spray. My shot didn't rattle his comrades this time, and they kept going. I aimed for another one, but I held my fire as a tawny blur shot across my vision. While I'd been trying to get a clear shot at another warrior, Fila had launched herself at the warriors. The muscular catwoman had a spear in one hand and her garden weasel in the other, and she brandished both as they sprang toward the attacking men. She raised the metal shaft of her garden weasel to block an obsidian blade from above at the same time as she stabbed the point of her stone spear downward. Her spiky gardening weapon smashed some of the obsidian blades off of the first warrior's club, and the point of her stone spear pierced through the golden palm of a warrior who'd been about to swing his blade at her leg. The warrior who'd swung the low blow at Fila screamed as the spear pinned his hand to the ground like a butterfly's wing in a museum case. He reached toward the shaft of the spear and wrapped his fingers around it, but his shaking hand fell to the ground as he writhed in agony. Fila only had one weapon now, but that wasn't stopping her. She twisted the garden weasel so that the newly sharpened end of the weapon jabbed into the chest of the warrior behind her, and the spiked rungs of the gardening implement smashed into the mesh of the warrior in front of her. She thrust the tool back so that the sharpened grip end poked out of its victim's back in a shredded mess of gore, and the spikes of the business end dragged the soft gold mesh of the warrior's face mask back to reveal a scrambled mess of coppery skin, red flesh, and dull white bone. Fila's tail lashed back and forth in what looked like pleasure as all three of her victims screamed in pain. Floppy had been right behind Fila, but as she dispatched her attackers, he changed his trajectory abruptly. The little mammoth barely gave any warning as he skidded off in another direction, but his lowered head and outstretched tusks showed that he meant business. The warriors that Floppy was charging were all locked in combat on the front lines, and it had been pretty much impossible to tell which ones were trying to attack us and which ones were trying to keep the other ones from attacking us. But the little mammoth had hit on a pretty decent gambit for sorting out the sympathizers from the slaughterers. About half of the warriors broke ranks and fled in the path of the galloping mammoth, but the quick way they jumped and ran out of the way suggested that they knew exactly what they were doing, instead of simply fleeing in sudden terror. The other half of the warriors pulled their weapons free from the fray, turned toward Floppy, and began to charge with their obsidian clubs in their hands. They ran purposefully toward the little mammoth with what looked like excellent fighting form. Floppy reared up on his hind legs as the warriors ran toward him, stretched his front feet up high, and then brought them down onto the heads of two of the warriors. When he brought down his full weight on them, their helmets crumpled like so much tinfoil, and blood started to seep out from under his big flat feet. Floppy swung his head down and to the side, swept away one of the warriors with his tusks, and pulled his head away as the man's body slammed into a tree trunk. He lowered his head again, stepped on the man's twitching body as it rolled onto the ground, and pushed his tusks into two more warriors that ran up to him, waving their blades. The little mammoth stepped onto one of the warriors with a cracking sound, pulled his head up and out of the man's guts, and scraped the other man off into the ground. Chief Red Squirrel pulled a long stone napped knife out of her belt, raised it high up, and stabbed a warrior in the back as he lunged toward us with his blade. She pulled the knife out of the man's back as blood dripped out of the wound, glanced to her left, and ducked down as another warrior swung his obsidian-edged blade toward her head. She scooped up a rock from the ground, smashed it against the side of the warrior's blade, then stabbed upward into his wrist as she bounced back up. The chief grabbed the man's bloodied wrist, snapped the club back into his face, and then she smashed his face in with the rock. Emma's hands crackled with lightning, and now her hair floated all around her face like the Bride of Frankenstein. Her sparks lit the clearing up bluer and brighter than the dawn sky as she tossed an enormous bolt at a group of charging warriors. As she stood in the light of her own lightning with her thunder echoing off of the trees, she looked like a sky goddess had come to earth. Fila growled as she crouched on the ground and gripped her garden weasel. Her yellow-green eyes gleamed in the dark, and Emma's lightning lit up her blood-spattered face. She looked like a primal protector of the earth who'd rip out your throat if she caught you despoiling her realm. Behind her, Floppy's wild eyes and blood-stained tusks looked nearly as terrifying as she did. The warriors all froze in the light of the electrical bolt, and the blue glow glittered off the napped edges of their obsidian knives as Emma's hands lit up with more blue sparks.
"Warriors!"
Emma cried as her hands glowed with zapping electric life. She pointed to the black, charred bodies and melted, twisted helmets of the men that her last lightning bolt had struck.
"Do you see what I've done to your fellows? I'll do the same thing to you here if you stay. Or do you think those silly little clubs you have with the bits of stone stuck all over them can possibly save you from the fury of my storm?"
About a third of the warriors turned and started to run, but even more of them brought their blades down on the backs and necks of the fleeing soldiers. A few of the ones who fled turned and tried to defend themselves with their blades, but they fell quickly under the weapons of the others.
"Ha ha! Run, cowards!"
Fila cackled. She crouched down, scooped a handful of bulbous red organs out of one of the fallen warrior's bodies, and shoved them into her mouth.
"Fila!"
Emma sent a shower of sparks up into the sky, and her hair fell back down around her face in a frizzy black halo. She sounded mildly aghast, but not really upset. The way my mom used to sound when she caught me drinking straight out of the milk carton or leaving my socks on the coffee table.
"Are you actually eating that man's insides? I have not eaten yet today, and he is a fallen foe."
Fila ripped up a handful of grass, scrubbed it across her bloodied mouth, and tossed the gory grass onto the ground.
"Do you not eat them? Have you seen us eat anyone we've killed yet?"
Emma shook her head.
"We have eaten many of the creatures we've killed so far,"
Fila pointed out.
"And even if the invaders are monkey people without fur or tails, the way you are, they are still not my kind."
"Fila, we don't eat humans because they carry diseases that could make us sick," I said. I glanced at the warriors who were waiting behind Chief Red Squirrel with their weapons at their sides, then glanced at my watch. "Also, we've got villagers to deliver a speech to, and they're probably going to be here any minute. We don't have that long before we're scheduled to leave."
"Oh, dear."
Emma clapped her hands to her mouth, then looked over at Chief Red Squirrel.
"We nearly forgot about the villagers, didn't we? They ought to be along any minute, and those warriors running through the woods are going to meet right up with them."
"No, they will not,"
Acrasis said. She winked at me, but the rest of her expression never changed from perfectly calm and neutral.
"All fleeing warriors have been disposed of. What kind of diseases, exactly?"
"Neurological stuff." I leaned over and lowered my voice as I whispered to Acrasis. "Nothing you can get, since you don't have a nervous system."
"I see."
Acrasis nodded.
"Spirits! I told the people of the village to stay home,"
Chief Red Squirrel said. She looked around at the warriors who'd stayed back with us, who were all slowly removing their helmets to reveal coppery pinkish skin and long black braids. She winked at us so quickly, I almost thought that I had imagined it.
"I made sure to bring only the warriors who I knew were true to our cause, so that they would protect you. But I knew that there was going to be a battle. I know that the boys and women all have the spirit of the warrior in their hearts, but I did not think that most of them would be able to hold their own against the eagle warriors. They were not happy to miss the words of inspiration from the spirits, but their lives are more important. They are the future of our people."
"You definitely made the right choice," I told the chief. I was suddenly aware that I was addressing the troops as well as talking to the chief, so I lowered my Glock and stuck it back into my holster. I was pretty sure that even if some of the Aztec warriors had actually stayed behind to ambush us, we could all take care of them before anyone else got hurt at this point. "You keep the safety of your people in mind, and that's really important. It shows you care about them."
"And a leader who cares about their people is the best kind,"
Emma said. She straightened her shoulders, smoothed back her hair, and then pointed at the torn-up remains of Grandfather Day's body.
"Now you see what happens when a religious leader sells out his people to remain in power? He gets torn apart. Grandfather Day did what he thought was best for the tribe."
Chief Red Squirrel sighed. She looked around at the collected warriors.
"We will tell the people he died fighting for the spirits. Is that understood?"
Murmurs of yes came from the warriors as several of them hustled forward and picked up the shaman's body. More of them started to grab their fallen comrades and pulled them off of the circle of dirt. "Make sure you get all your guys out of the dirt circle," I called as the warriors sorted through their dead. "When we leave in about a quarter of an hour, everything on that circle goes with us."
"Then You'll take them to the spirit world.
One warrior stopped as he tugged on the arm of one of his fallen friends, and I realized that not all of them had gotten the memo that we were people instead of spirits. Nope, their souls will explode even if they're dead, I said. Honor them like you normally do, and they'll be fine.
Spirits, do you have any wisdom for us before you leave this realm?
The chief bowed to us, but when she came back up again, her face had a desperate look on it.
My warriors are ready to hear your wisdom and spread it among our people.
Of course we do, but you must leave directly after,
Emma said. She raised her eyebrows at me and jerked her chin toward the chief.
Well, does the great warrior want to speak for us all, or shall we all share our wisdom?
I looked out at the sea of expectant, enraptured men and women. I knew all of them had been waiting for a long time for the right time to fight. I'd wanted to stay out of trouble by not getting involved in this world's politics, but our little group hadn't had that luxury. Even as I tried to avoid taking one side or another, we'd posed a huge threat to the power of the invaders just by existing, and they'd tried to stamp us out before we'd even made a move. I knew that the Aztecs would make a move to wipe out this village no matter what I told the people here to do. I figured that they might just have a chance if they struck first. I'm a warrior, I pointed to the skull on my shirt. And all I can tell you to do is fight as hard as you can. Fight dirty, fight crazy, and never stop fighting. Because if you stop fighting, you're going to be dead. And you might die anyway, but at least you'll take a few of the bastards with you.
You know this land better than they do,
Fela said. She twisted her garden weasel in her grip and grinned a bloody grin.
Use that knowledge. Protect the land as you protect your people, and the plants and animals will help you.
You are all stronger together.
Acrasis spread out her hands, and her long, straight black hair blew around her face in very convincing waves.
Think as many, but move as one.
And remember that we love you all,
Emma said. She smiled, clasped her hands in front of her, and looked around at the waiting warriors.
We want you to be free on your land and fight for your people. You don't have to wait for a sign from us to do the right thing.
Floppy raised his trunk and punctuated the end of Emma's speech with a trumpet. Now, everyone get out of here. I glanced at my watch and started to make shooing motions. Go, go. It's not going to be pretty when we leave.
Thank you, spirits.
Chief Red Squirrel started to back away from us.
Warriors, follow me. Let the spirits have their privacy.
The warriors left with their comrades' bodies slung over their shoulders, but they didn't bother to clear out any of the other corpses. As the last of them vanished through the trees, the alarm on my watch started to beep, and I realized that we were still surrounded by bloody limbs, severed heads, and puddles of gore. Hands and arms inside the ride! I motioned my pack to the center of our circle. Make sure nothing you need is outside the circle. We have less than a minute until we get out of here.
There is nothing but more armor and weapons.
Acrasis motioned to the twisted, torn-up bodies that laid strewn all over our territory.
We do not need to bring dead bodies with us if we are not going to eat them,
Fela said. She squatted down and grabbed one of the corpses under the arms.
Floppy, help me throw these bodies into the woods.
Floppy lumbered toward the body with his tusks lowered. Belay that order, Floppy, I yelled. I grabbed Fela's shoulder and gently tugged her back. Fela, don't try anything with the bodies right now, okay? We don't have enough time to make a dent in this pile, and we need to put distance between ourselves and the edge. We don't know what's going to be out there.
Fine.
Fela dropped the body, waved Floppy back, then she turned and strode back to the cabin.
But if we end up in a world without meat, I am eating the bodies.
I will be happy to split them with you,
Acrasis said. We stood back against the wall of the cabin as the engine of the Depp whined, and the bright white light blotted out the trees.
I'm ready for anything,
Emma whispered to me. She patted the frizzy bun that she'd shoved her hair back into and raised her hands. Guys, be ready, but maybe try not to look like you're about to attack, I suggested. If we land in a group full of people, it'll just invite hostility.
I will try,
Fela sighed. She planted the spiky end of the garden weasel in the ground and gripped the shaft with both hands like a putter.
Is this better?
Hole in one, I joked, as the bright white light faded and the Depp's whine wound down. The trees in front of us looked pretty much like the trees from back home, but I was quickly learning that the trees weren't going to tell me much about what else might be out there. The only thing that the oaks, maples, and birches in front of me told me was that we were on a roughly similar evolutionary path. The yard or two of slightly overgrown grass that laid between the dirt circle and the trees suggested some kind of cultivation, but it also didn't say much about the level of technology in this universe. Or it could mean that the stretch of woods and clearing we'd landed in was a favorite of grass-eating herbivores. At least the trees in front of us were quiet for the moment, except for the dawn call of birdsong.
"There is a man walking toward us on the other side of the circle,"
Acrasis murmured into my ear. She'd gone back to her burgundy-haired disguise.
"He has a weapon in his hands. Should I consume him?"
"No," I whispered back. I started toward the corner of the house, but hesitated. I had no idea if the man really was Saul, or even if Saul would recognize me. What kind of weapon does he have?"
"One I cannot be harmed by."
Acrasis flipped her burgundy hair and headed toward the corner of the house. Another identical Acrasis popped up next to me, and both spoke in stereo when they spoke.
"I have observed that men are less willing to casually harm unfamiliar women than unfamiliar men, especially women who they perceive to need assistance. It will be safer if I approach him first."
"You have a point," I admitted. Even if I wanted to be the first one to see my own father, I didn't want to get shot by a trigger-happy Saul. My hand went to my Glock for a second, but I pulled it away. I knew that I definitely wasn't willing to shoot my own father, even if I wasn't anything to him in this universe.
"Hello, sir,"
Acrasis called from in front of the house. The Acrasis next to me raised her hand and smiled. Her smile actually went all the way up to her eyes, so I counted that as an improvement.
"Hot chick lost in the woods. Real original."
Saul's gravelly voice floated through the air, and my heart jumped. Solomon Meyer was alive, and as paranoid as ever.